Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Fatal Identity by Jodi Bailey. Secrets from her family's past thrust her into the crosshairs. At her partner's Christmas wedding in the mountains, Deputy U.S. Marshal Dana Santiago's almost abducted, and the quick actions of Alex Rich Richardson save her. Now Dana and Rich must work together to figure out why the kidnappers seem willing to go to any lengths to capture her. But to find the truth, they must first dig up her family's long-buried past.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I'm talking with Jodi Bailey, who writes stories about freedom and the heroes who fight for it. She's convinced the beach, good coffee, and great books can cure all ills, and I agree with you, Jodi, except for the coffee part. That is so true, but welcome to my show.
How are you a writer if you don't drink coffee? I thought that was required.
I drink tea. I cannot stand coffee. I can't. I have tried it. I have tried it with like a half a cup of sugar in it. I've tried it with no sugar. I've tried good coffee. My husband is like a coffee aficionado. I mean, he like roasts his own beans sometimes, and I still can't stand it.
Yeah, I guess it's an acquired taste. Yeah, I blame my husband.
I drink a lot of tea. So, you know, good strong black tea has the same kind of, that's what does it for me. So,
there you go.
Yeah. But I'm with you on the beach and great books, though.
I need some beach time right now, I'm telling you.
Oh, my goodness. I know. We haven't been able to go really anywhere,
mm-mm.
You know, this the school in the summer. And we just had a little, my husband started a new job at the beginning of the summer. And so, no vacation time. And, yeah. I know, we've all been a little stir-crazy, but what are you going to do?
Put the picture on your computer screen and enjoy that.
Yes.
Need the backdrop, you know, you click on your file and there it is.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So let's talk about which are your books are your favorites while we're talking about books before we get into writing.
Oh, my goodness. My favorite one is probably Compromised Identity. It's like in the middle. It's about the fifth one I did, I think. Because for the first time, I wrote a wounded hero, physically and emotionally. And so it was very interesting to kind of dive into that. I had kind of dealt, occasionally I'll dig into PTSD a little bit because there's usually I have a military hero.
Okay.
But with him, he had been through some extreme things in the prior book. He was not meant to be a hero in the next book, but it just kind of happened. And so he had been through some pretty extreme things. And so I kind of got attached to him just because he had so much healing to do. So it was kind of, he was an interesting one to write, and just how he dealt with being a hero and being the strong criminal investigator protecting someone else while he was kind of falling apart.
Yeah, I think that's one of the favorite things to write about, right? We have those characters with their flaws and the hurts that they have, because I think it just speaks to, I mean, we all carry around those hurts. We all have those things. And You know, some of us are a little further along on the healing journey than others. And, you know, you do want, I always hope that when someone reads one of my books, they kind of recognize a little bit of themselves maybe in there and realizes they can have that hope to get better, right? I mean, we don't leave your hero in the, you know, the same as when you started with the book.
That's the beauty is how do they heal? What brings them to the point of healing or beginning to heal? Because he's not fully healed by the end, but he's, you know, he's on the road. And so that was just a fun one to write, so to dig into. And all of my characters are overcoming some sort of fear, because that's a big thing with me is overcoming that fear and getting past it. And so he was, with him, I got to dig a little deeper with him, which was it was a tough dive, but it ended up being just endearing him to me, and I hope whoever read about him. So do you
find that? I mean, his characters become so real to you. I mean, I saw another writer posting on Facebook, you know, I just wrote this scene and I'm crying. I'm like, oh, good, I'm not the only one who's like, don't nobody come in, because I'm like sobbing as I'm writing this.
Yes. I had a character one time, and he was a secondary character, and he was kind of around the edges. And I knew somebody was going to die, but I didn't know who. And it wasn't a suspense. It was a contemporary romance. And when I got to the scene and they knocked on the door, and I was like, okay, but I still don't know who died. Like, who are they coming
from?
Because I'm very much a seat of the pants writer. And when, you know, they opened the door and it came out of the other character's mouth, I knew all along. I guess the James Scott Bell calls it the boys in the basement. You know,
right.
They've been working in my subconscious, I guess, and they spit it out. And it was as shocking to me as I hope it will be to the reader. But I cried. I'm like, no, he can't die. He was supposed to be the hero of book three.
Because you
now
have...
he's not.
Yes.
So now he's
not.
But it was perfect and sad. And I'm in Panera just like, nobody look at me because I'm just grief-stricken.
Yes. And sometimes it's hard to kind of, you know, come back from that place. When we're writing, especially those intense scenes, whether it's sadness or joy or the character is wrestling with something and they're coming out on the other side and your kid comes up and says, Mom, where's the potato chips?
Right.
And you're like,
where am I? Wait.
I know. Yeah. And you're just so into it. You're just nothing else. And I love that's like such a wonderful, it's a wonderful feeling for a writer to kind of be in that zone. Yeah, so.
Yeah,
but
nice
you were talking.
You get lost. And
yeah, and so you
those.
Hope.
Those are the best scenes.
They are, and you hope that, you know, as you read, you know, reviews from writer from, about your book, sometimes my favorites are the ones that talk about how they just couldn't put it down because they were just so lost in the story, and you're just
I
like,
love
yeah. Because then I remember all those times I was lost in writing that story.
Yes.
So why romantic suspense?
I actually didn't start out to do that. So my whole writing journey is like this whole God-driven thing. I was in contemporary romance, women's fiction. That was what I was doing. I wanted to be like the next Susie May Warren or, you know, Rachel Houck. I always say her name wrong. But anyway,
yeah,
that was what I wanted to do. Kristen Billerbeck, that was kind of where I was going. And that's the book that got me an agent. It's, you know, it got some looks. And so I was talking to my agent one day, and I'm a military spouse. And she said, have you ever thought about writing military suspense? Because Harlequin is looking for military suspense writers. And I said, no. Like,
yeah.
You're funny. And I hung up the phone, and I remember this as clear as I can remember anything. I was going to pick my daughter up from school, and I walked to the coat closet, and I opened the door, and I thought, what if somebody was in my closet? And then I thought, okay, what if it wasn't the bad guy? Like, what if it was a good guy hiding in the closet? And the next thing, and I'm driving to pick up my daughter, and this whole scene starts spinning up of, you know, why is he in the closet? What? Who is he? What's going on? And before I knew it, I had, like, half of a military suspense done in my head. Like, so I just sat down and I started writing. And so I called my agent back, and I said, I'll do one military suspense. You know, this will be how we break in. You know, we'll try to break in with this one. I won. Well, 14 later, here we are. She saw something in me I did not, because I turned it into her, and I actually said, that's it. I'm not writing another one. That was too hard. And daggum it, like 2 days later, I got another scene in my head, and off we ran. And now we have, like I said, we have a 14 or 15. So I guess
that's
this
funny.
Is what I'm supposed to do. I'm not trying to write a book anymore without killing someone. I know,
right?
How.
And I was talking to another writer for this podcast about You know, how no one ought to look on our, you know, Google searches because I'm
right?
Things like how to kill someone with XYZ and, you know, and what does a copperhead bite look like and how can I,
right?
You know, make, you know, put this scene, essence in a potential book. I'm just researching copperhead snakes going, I think this could be a, maybe not a murder weapon, but a definite danger element.
Right. I was at school after school one day. I was used to teach full time, and we had a meeting after school, so I was working on my book after school. And I can't remember what I was researching, but it was something to the effect of, you know, what drug or what, how can I kill somebody? And the tech director for the school came up and knocked on the door and asked me to stop. Because it was pinging her, they had the, you know, where they can see what kids are doing online. And she's like, my computer's going off like crazy because you're hitting all these keywords. Can you please stop? I was like, sorry.
Sorry. Oops, I should have done, you should have brought your own laptop.
So that was fun.
So what is the weirdest way you've killed someone or had someone die in your novels?
I actually have, like, there's two, and one was I got backed into a corner because I kind of lay out the 10 big things that have to happen, and then I write to those 10 things, so I kind of seat of the pants my way through parts. And I had backed, it was in my first book, and I had backed my hero and heroine into this conversation I saw no way out of. I was like, okay, this conversation's just rambling, I don't know how to get them out of it. So the phone rang, and I'm like, okay, what's going on the phone? So I had one of the privates in her unit was hung in the shakeout tower where they hang heavy drop parachutes to dry on Fort Bragg. It was set at Fort Bragg. And so it's this really high. They'll hook the parachutes up and they'll run them all the way up to this, like, I can't remember how many stories high it is, but they had strung him up in the top of the shakeout tower. So that was one. And then I used to, my cousin, he'll challenge me for every book I write, and they're crazy challenges. And so, but it's fun, and it keeps me excited. So he had wanted me to put somebody in the book that was trying to learn how to play Guns N' Roses on the violin. So I was like, okay, I can do this. Well, the guy ended up getting strangled with his violin strings. And so there was kind of a
because he played
like
Guns N' Roses on the violin.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a sacrilege right there.
Right. So it was kind of funny because, you know, it wasn't funny that, you know, the guy died in the book.
Right.
For a while, they're like, wait, is this part of the mystery or did somebody just get really tired of him sawing away on that violin?
Yeah.
So that was
kind
of fun.
that would be a toss up. On that. So it's not funny, but it is interesting to see, you know, to kind of.
It's the thought process is funny as a writer.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
The thought, how did you get there? And I'm like, people would never believe how we get where we get, like with some things.
No. And sometimes, you know, you read a story or see a snippet of something and you're just like off and running with I can use that. That's going to be great.
Or you're brainstorming and you get into the sublimely ridiculous and you're cracking up laughing and then you're like, wait, I can actually do that in the story.
Yeah.
So I would hate for people to overhear my brainstorming sessions more than I would hate for them to search my web browser.
Yes, I'm with you, Jody. Well, we are almost out of time. Is there anything else you want our listeners to know about your writing and your books?
I really hope that when they pick them up, they kind of get a glimpse of what it's like to be in the military. I try to be real, but, I mean, we have to take liberties. But I hope they get that glimpse of, because I know that only like 1% of the population is connected to the military.
Yeah.
And it can be kind of hard to understand, and TV shows and movies give you this kind of distorted view, and it's a personal thing for me to get it right and to kind of give that real-life glimpse, even though the stories are a little over the top.
Right.
I'm hoping to give that, and to give that hope of, you know, Christ is always in the book, is always in the labs, and to give that hope along with it. And so, And I love to hear from people. I love emails. I have actually written books based on things people have sent asked
Oh,
for
cool.
in emails. So it's kind of fun. Like, hey, could you make this happen? Sure. Why not?
Sure. Yeah, maybe with a special twist on it. Well, thank you so much for being on my show today.
Thank you for having me.
And you can, listeners, stay tuned for an excerpt from Fatal Identity after this interview. You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking with Jody Bailey. She writes stories about freedom and the heroes who fight for it. You can find out how to connect with her in the notes to this podcast.
Now an excerpt from Fatal Identity by Jody Bailey. She would not cry. Not today. Deputy U.S. Marshal Dana Santiago stepped out of a rough wood barn in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina, and stared up at the sky. The stars shone clear and bright after a brief mid-December snow had frosted the ground in fairy dust. Through the wide-open barn doors, the bass of a 70s disco song thumped while laughter overlaid the beat. Weddings didn't usually get to her, but the story behind her teammate Sam Maldonado's trip to the altar with his new bride Amy might actually deserve a tear or two. So much pain. So much fear. So much healing. With the wedding so close to Christmas, when every radio station pumped out nostalgia and every street corner in the tiny town of Mountain Springs was lit with twinkle lights and candy canes, well, even her normally untouchable heart didn't stand a chance. Maybe she'd even put up a Christmas tree this year. Dana smiled at the full moon that shone on Wyatt and Jenna Stevens' property, where Amy Brady and her teammate Sam Maldonado had said their vows earlier. She hadn't had a Christmas tree since she moved out on her own. There was barely time to ship her mom a present, let alone get wrapped up in all of the holiday trappings. Witness protection didn't take a break on the holidays. She slipped around the corner of the barn, out of sight of everyone celebrating inside. Rumor had it Amy would be throwing the bouquet soon, and Dana definitely did not want to find herself caught in the single lady roundup. The minute Sam proposed to Amy, he'd started assuming the whole world wanted to fall in love as well. He'd forgotten who he was dealing with. If she wanted to keep advancing in the U.S. Marshals Service, then she had a job to do. Her job sure didn't leave room for romance. Her plane would fly out of Asheville tomorrow morning, and she'd be Atlanta-bound, back to work in their team's satellite office by afternoon. Half a week away from her computers was too long. It was time to leave all of the girl talk and dress decisions behind. In the light that spilled from the barn, parked cars sat in long rows, fading into the darkness. She glanced at her rented sedan toward the middle of the outside row, and her breath caught. Something moved near the vehicle. A shadowed figure hesitated at the passenger door, then circled to the front and disappeared. He'd probably knelt down to look under the car, likely searching for a hidden key. Or maybe someone had stepped out to take a phone call and dropped their wallet. This was the downside of her job in witness protection. It made her suspicious of every crunching leaf and every partygoer who simply needed a moment of quiet. Still, Dana glanced at the open barn doors, then back toward the parking area. If someone was out on Wyatt's remote property looking for a quick score, she should alert someone. The wedding reception was in full swing, though, and she really didn't want to drag down the festivities. Besides, she was a well-trained and competent deputy marshal. If this was a common thief, she could handle the situation. Though her gun remained safely locked away in her room at the bed and breakfast, she knew how to inflict serious damage with her hands and feet. She might not be able to recover anything the perp had already stolen, but she could certainly put some fear into him and send him packing. Slipping into the faint darkness along the perimeter of the makeshift parking lot, Dana eased toward her car as shadows shifted in front of her. If the target left the area around her vehicle, she wanted to know as soon as possible. She rounded the slight curve in the line and took cover near the front bumper of a blue pickup. Two cars away, only the man's legs and feet were visible beneath her rental vehicle. She hesitated. He was under her car. This wasn't a petty thief looking for a quick score. He was tampering. With her vehicle. Either this guy was seriously twisted and had randomly targeted one of the few cars in the lot with out-of-state tags, or he knew who she was. If that was the case, then the situation was a lot more dangerous than... A strong arm snaked around her waist and jerked her backward as it lifted her from the ground against a broad chest. A gloved hand clamped over her mouth, grinding leather against her teeth. She struggled, swung her elbow backward, and made contact. But a voice hissed, "You fight! I send my partner into the wedding with guns blazing!" Dana stilled. Sam and Amy had been through enough. The very thought of a massacre at their wedding was intolerable. She'd bide her time. Sooner or later, her captor would slip up and Dana would find a way to escape him without putting everyone else in danger. The hand over her mouth jerked her head back and to the side against a bony shoulder. Pain elicited a feeble cry from her throat as lightning bolts jolted through her neck and down her unnaturally arched spine. A second man, likely the one who'd been under her car, stepped closer. He tilted his head to study her, his face veiled by shadows, though his dark eyes glittered. He ran one finger down her cheek to her chin, then leaned closer. The heat of his breath brushed her skin as his lips swept past her cheek.
"Buenos noches, Dana Santiago."
Her heart beat faster, and she fought to swallow a flash of panic. He'd used her name. He knew who she was. She was the target.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.